Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning. It is Friday morning, the 22nd of June. The sun is rising, and in all the variability that we experience in life, the one fixed truth is that that tomb is empty, and because Jesus has conquered death, there is always hope, and there is always future in his beautiful kingdom, regardless of our present circumstances, as difficult as they might be. You are listening to Faith Radio Mornings, and I am your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined by Logan Rausch in studio, and news producer Paul Perreault in the newsroom. And Logan, Paul graciously provides me with these stacks of headlines every morning that I walk into. And so I kind of sort through, call them out. And there was one. I know there's a lot of important headlines, but this is the one that caught my attention for today. I'm most excited about this. I didn't know this was a thing, but today, Logan, is National Kissing Day. And experts say kissing boosts happiness. So here's the headline. On this National Kissing Day, relationship expert Marla Mattinson says studies show kissing boosts happiness. It triggers oxytocin and serotonin. It's important to remember that it's only in a long-term committed relationship. But if you can get in a couple of good kisses a day, you can help calm the system of your spouse and trigger the release of happiness hormones.
Does it work with cats and dogs too? Because they get plenty of kisses from them. Really nowhere else.
I guess, is that your best option in present circumstances? I know you're 22 years old and probably sorting a lot of this stuff out. So, yeah, I mean, it might work with pets. If you could experiment a bit this weekend and let us know on Monday morning, Logan, if that might be helpful. Say, we got a great show ahead here on Faith Radio Mornings. In just a minute, we'll be joined on the line by Adam Holtz from Focus on the Family Media and Entertainment. And we'll talk through the movies coming out, including a review of Jurassic World. So stay with us. Be back in a minute. And that music signals, of course, that we are joined, as we often are, by regular contributor Adam Holtz from Focus on the Family Media and Entertainment to talk us through some of the movies that have coming out, as well as other entertainment headlines of the day. Good morning, Adam. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Peter.
So we talked a little Incredibles 2 last week. We knew it was coming out, and it sounds like it's doing unbelievably well in the box office.
Yeah, it has been a record setter, biggest animated opening of all time, and I mean, it really, I think it was the eighth biggest opening ever, and it's just continued to do really well this week. I actually went with my family, I think Tuesday or Wednesday night, and the theater was full. I mean, it looked like it was a weekend showing, not a weeknight showing. So people are really turning out for this film.
And my kids saw it yesterday, or a few of them did, and they loved it. I haven't had a chance. Logan, you've seen it. What was your take on the deal?
Oh, it was so wonderful. Now, keep in mind, I saw the original Incredibles when I was 8 years old.
Oh, you drive me nuts, Logan. Drive me nuts.
So this second one was amazing to watch as an adult. The nostalgia was all there. It was beautiful.
That's great. And Adam, anything just out of that movie? We talked a bit last week about it, but anything to sort of caution parents about, or is it pretty green light on this one?
You know, I think the one thing that's a mild disappointment is that there are a couple minor profanities, and, you know, in the big picture compared to everything else out there, I suppose you could say it's not that big a deal, but I was disappointed to hear those in a Pixar movie, and I hope they don't creep too much further in that direction. And something else happened when my family saw it that I thought was caught me by surprise, and it's a good reminder that we often talk about equipping your family to make good decisions with your media choices and movie selections, it's easy to forget that if you have different kids, they have different sensitivities. And my 7-year-old was really frightened by one kind of dark, intense scene that has a bunch of bright lights and a couple suspenseful kind of jump scenes, and that totally caught me by surprise. And in that moment, It's like, oh, what do we do? I didn't really want to walk out of Incredibles 2, but I didn't want my daughter to be traumatized. So I said, come on over. And so she crawled onto my lap and, you know, buried her head in my shoulder. And to me, it was just a reminder, even though I think about this stuff all the time, of how sometimes we find ourselves in situations that we have to figure out how to navigate.
And, you know, Adam, I definitely, that scene, I know what you're talking about. And just kind of a warning to our listeners, I feel like there almost should have been an epilepsy warning before that.
Well, I think there was an epilepsy warning. Disney put out an epilepsy warning on that scene because it does have some bright, flashing, strobe-like lights. And so I'm pretty sure Disney did actually put that warning out.
Well, and this is, let's stay here for a minute. We'll get into Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, in just a few. But I know, Adam, you've recently come out with an article, just some shifting in how you're doing family ratings because of what you described. Yeah. There's different sensitivities. Families are different. So can you help us understand, how do we know when we can sort of walk our kids through what they've seen versus we might need to shield them from seeing this? What's your take on this?
Well, I think two things. We have to know our kids, and we have to know what's in the films that we're looking at. And what you're referring to is our family-friendly rating system on our webpage, which was a rating on a scale of 0 to 5. And we have decided to pull that, and we've got a lengthy blog on our website explaining that in more depth. But, you know, the gist of it was we continued to hear from people that would say, oh, I love your rating system. It means I don't have to read your review at PluggedIn.com. Oh, I saw this movie, and I can't believe you gave it this rating. It had this, 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 and this, and all of those things are listed in our review, which, again, would suggest that people were using the rating system to sort of short-circuit their critical thinking, and we're really concerned about that. And for that reason, we did something that we acknowledge is kind of countercultural and unusual in a world where everything is rated these days. But we really encourage you to read our reviews and pay attention to the content and then think, okay, how is this content going to affect my kids, you know, each of my individual children? And, you know, the guy who did our Incredibles review doesn't have young children right now, and this week I went back and added a segment to our violent content section saying there's an intense scene in here and it might scare young children. So, you know, we do our best to think through everything that might affect your family to give you the information you need to think critically about how best to make decisions for them.
And I know with my 5 kids, I often try to watch the movie first so that I can
prep
them at that point.
Yeah, that's a great idea whenever possible.
But sometimes I even get, I don't really know, are they going to catch that? Is that a big deal? Because Disney and Pixar, they're sort of well known for having some adult humor in there while they're kids. So is there a way to tell when it's time to talk with your kids about some things versus just sort of letting it go over their heads?
You know, I think you can, you know, throw out some floater questions. You know, was there anything unusual that you noticed? You know, or what did you think about X scene? And you can kind of let their responses dictate how much further and how much deeper you need to go. And I think the more that we can just be engaged with our kids on the real world issues that we deal with, you know, kids are growing up today in a world of bullying, of sex, of violence. And even if they're in fairly sheltered and Christian homes where parents are doing a good job of filtering that, they get exposed to stuff at school. So I think that ongoing dialogue, even apart from the movie, sets the stage to talk about stuff when it does pop up in movies.
We're talking with Adam Holtz from Focus on the Family and Media Entertainment and just reviews how to walk through so many of these movies and the music that's in our culture today. Adam, we're going to take a break a little early so we can have a more time, extended time, to really get into Chris Pratt, what he said at the MTV Awards, as well as, of course, the movie coming out, Jurassic World. So let's take a break, and we'll come back with Adam Holtz. It is 16 minutes past the hour, and we're joined on the line by Adam Holtz, who covers a lot of the media and movies that are coming out each week. And, of course, that was some of the music from Jurassic Park, one of the most famous series of all time. And we have a new one coming out this week. Adam, let's do the review in just a minute. But Chris Pratt certainly made headlines for some different reasons this week when he was at the MTV Awards speech. And he sort of surprisingly, I guess for some, brought God into this conversation of nine tips for life. And so Logan's going to play the first couple tips, one and two, and then let's talk about what Chris had to say this week.
Number one, breathe. If you don't, you'll suffocate. Number two, you have a soul. Be careful with it.
And I love what he's doing there, Adam, is obviously this idea of taking a deep breath and that our souls are so often anxious and that it really matters what we let in and what's part of this deal. So how did you respond to what Chris had to say on this one?
Well, I wasn't surprised because he's been pretty outspoken about his faith, and he's such a likable guy that he has this ability to just sort of make God seem like, well, yeah, of course. I mean, it just seems natural, and in that sense, I think he really is a good representative. He's not strident. He's not angry. He's not some of the caricatures that sometimes unfairly get pinned on evangelicals. And the interesting thing to me is that, you know, we hear lots of people at award shows give shout-outs to God, if I can, you know, be that informal. But he said something much more specific toward the end, his final rule. He said, nobody is perfect. People will tell you that you're perfect just the way that you are. You are not. You are imperfect. You always will be, but there's a powerful force that designed you that way. And if you are willing to accept that, you will have grace, and grace is a gift. Like the freedom that we enjoy in this country, grace was paid for by somebody else's blood. Do not forget that. Do not take that for granted. I'm like, wow, you know, in just a couple of sentences, he got in the issue of our fallenness, our need for redemption, the fact that we can't do it ourselves. And even though he didn't mention Jesus specifically by name, it's pretty clear he's talking about Jesus' sacrifice on our behalf, and that leads to grace, that we can receive something from God. He even said that God is our designer. So I thought it was really pretty sophisticated theologically to jam that much stuff in there, but still in a way that wasn't, you know, you've sinned, you need Jesus as your Savior, which obviously is the gospel message, but he managed to communicate it in a way that just was a half turn different, and I wonder if it tweaked people's curiosity. It's like, well, what's he talking about? You know, what is this grace thing? What is, whose blood paid for my, you know, for my faults and my mistakes? So I wasn't surprised, but I will say the MTV video and TV awards and music awards are infamous for people doing shocking things. And this was sort of shocking in a way that I'm not sure we've ever seen before. And so I thought it was terrific.
And it certainly has created a lot of buzz. What would you do with your family at this point, Adam, if your kids maybe are fans of Guardians of the Galaxy, and so they see Chris Pratt and maybe there's some inappropriate material in that movie, and yet when you see him at the award speech, he's saying this. How would you handle maybe the potential dissonance with your own kids?
Well, I would say that we do have a number of Hollywood celebrities that talk about having faith in Christ, you know, who really identify as Christians. But that doesn't mean that everything that they choose to do is going to be family friendly. I mean, even I love Patricia Heaton, but I wouldn't let my kids watch everything she's done. You know, same with Tim Allen. He, you know, talks about God and being a conservative, but Last Man Standing was and will be again when it comes back a show that really is aimed at adults. And so I think that I would deal with it that way. And I think I would say, you know, none of us are perfect, and these people don't always make perfect decisions either. You know, I think I was disappointed to hear when Chris Pratt and Anna Faris announced their divorce. You know, that's sort of an illustration right there. Here, this guy, he's saying some good things, but obviously not everything is perfect in his life either. And I don't think he would represent it that way. I don't think he would say he has it all figured out. So just because we like somebody in real life, IRL, as the kids would say, doesn't mean that we just have carte blanche to, you know, engage everything that they're doing in the entertainment world without thinking critically about it.
Well, and I think that's the point he was even making in those last points that you read. Just we're not perfect, and we do need grace. We do need forgiveness. And I think those are some important lessons just for our kids, that we don't have to portray ourselves as perfect in this situation.
Right.
Well, let's talk briefly about the movie as well. Obviously, it's going to be a huge event, I think, this weekend. The original Jurassic Park, I was with some young people yesterday, didn't even remember that movie. I was horrified by the idea of this, you know, incredible moment in my own life when the T-Rex and the Raptors.
Years ago, so Logan is -3 when it came out. Right?
See, now we're back to this idea. Logan, you drive me nuts. All right, can you just say Dr. Peter Kasner really
so
quick?
I'm so sorry, Dr. Peter Kasner.
Thank you so much. I feel much more secure again. So we're 25 years removed. Obviously, the first in this reboot series came out with Chris Pratt a couple of years ago, and now we have two. Have you seen the movie yet?
I have not seen it yet, but I have talked at length with two or three guys on our team who have. So I'll be giving slightly secondhand information. My almost 12-year-old is chomping at the bit, no pun intended, to go. And, you know, just as an aside, he got introduced to Jurassic World, the first one, in a weak moment. I let him watch that movie on a flight to Hawaii. And if you've ever flown to Hawaii and you're trying to fill 6 or 7 hours with your children, it's like, all right, you can watch Jurassic World. And so that one sort of crept in sideways on us. But if you've seen any of the other films, you know pretty much what to expect here. Bad guys get chomped. Dinosaurs eat things. There are good dinosaurs and bad dinosaurs. And Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard are back reprising their roles. And this time around, they're trying to save the dinosaurs that were left after the last movie, after Jurassic World, and they want to move them to kind of a preserve where they can roam free and just be their natural dinosaur selves. But there's always problems, right? You know, there's a volcano that's about to erupt. If you've seen the trailers, you've seen that. And there are bad people who want to use the dinosaur DNA to make money, and so it's sort of that conflict. This one might have more of an endangered species kind of feel to it. There's more of an environmental and conservation message of all things in this one than perhaps the first four movies. But, you know, if you've seen any of them, it's pretty much more of the same here. Adults and teens are going to be pretty much fine with this. There's actually less profanity here than we've had in some of the previous ones, but about the same number of people getting chomped and eaten. So young and sensitive viewers, still, we need to be really careful with them.
That's great. We're going to see it this afternoon, I know, and excited to walk through. But that does sound like Jurassic World to me, and sympathize with that plane flight situation. When it's down to either Saving Private Ryan or Jurassic World,
right,
you're probably going to go the Jurassic World place, right?
Well, and I know that, you know, the plane stuff, they edit some of the stuff. I'm like, wow, they've probably gotten rid of some of the harsh stuff. And again, I think it speaks to the gap between our idealism and the reality that we face as parents. Even though I work at Plugged In, we don't get it perfect, and we wrestle with this stuff just like you do. And so you try to make the best decisions you can on a case-by-case basis, and sometimes you look back and you're like, well, not sure that was the best choice, but we're going to deal with it going forward.
Adam, we've got about 2 minutes left here, and let's transition over to some music conversation. On your site, PluggedIn.com, you did a review of Jay-Z and Beyonce's new album. And again, it's sort of surprising. They you know, in a culture of divorce in Hollywood, they're really fighting for the relationship.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and it's such a – this is just a – it's a good news, bad news story. Their new album is called Everything is Love. And it's kind of the end of a trilogy. A couple of years ago, Beyonce came out and had this really autobiographical album called Lemonade, and it was angry because it really pretty much said, my husband cheated on me. And then Jay-Z had a follow-up album called 444 that came out about a year after that, and he kind of did a mea culpa and kind of walked it back and said, yeah, I screwed up. And so now we have this album, Everything is Love, which is a very pro-marriage, pro-fight for your marriage. We're not going to, you know, we realize not everything's going to be perfect, but we're going to fight for our marriage. There are some really terrific messages here, but you know there's a but coming, right?
Of course.
It's also an album that is full of profanity. It's full of some really graphic sexual references. You know, and so we've got this redemptive message side by side with a lot of just nasty stuff. And so it's like, oh man, if you're going to make a redemptive album, do you really have to have all of this other stuff woven in? And I get it. I'm not naive. I know especially where Jay-Z is coming from. And in recent years, Beyonce's stuff has been almost just as bad in terms of her language, even though we tend to think of her as a role model. And so I'm glad that they're fighting for their marriage. I'm really glad that they have recorded some songs that get at the difficulty of working through hard stuff like infidelity. But I wish they could have left some of the profanity and the vulgarity and the nastiness out, but obviously they haven't chosen to do that here.
Yeah, it could be a powerful message for our kids just to keep fighting for relationships when it's, you know, yeah, it can be absolutely so easy to leave. So that is unfortunate. Adam, love having you on every week. The time is way too short. Thanks. The headlines are way too many, but where can we go to see your stuff, Adam?
PluggedIn.com.
That's great stuff. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Peter.
We'll take a short break for a breakpoint as well as news. And in the second half of our hour, we'll be joined by millennial evangelical Chris Martin. So stay with us. It's 32 minutes past the hour. Logan, quick pop culture quiz for you from my era growing up. We've got some birthdays today. Judy Garland, who passed in 1969. She died at the age of 47. This was her date of birth. And we also have Cyndi Lauper, who musician. Either of these two even on your millennial radar these days?
I have heard both those names, and they've both been referred to in high regard as great people.
I feel so relevant that I know them. Let's head to news. When we come back, we'll talk with the evangelical millennial, Chris Martin. We're with Dr. David Walsh this morning, psychologist and author, and he's getting us into the mind of the teenager and talks a bit about the importance of sleep on the development of the brain.
There's no question that sleep affects our ability to remember, our ability to pay attention, our mood stability. So sleep is very, very important. And the bad news is that every age group right now is not getting as much sleep as they need, and the most sleep-deprived group of all are the teenagers. Your teenagers should be getting about 9 hours sleep a night. The national average, 7.5. And technology is part of this. So, you know, if kids are playing video games until 10 o'clock at night, they're not going to fall asleep until 10:30 or 11. And so I think turning off the technology and starting to wind down before it's time to go to sleep are things that parents can do to help their kids to start to eliminate that sleep deficit.
I have to say, I love it when my 16 and 18-year-olds listen in the morning, but oh, this one, we might just play on repeated loop throughout our house. 9 hours of sleep, turn off the devices. I love it. Great stuff from Dr. David Walsh and the Mind of the Teenager. You can catch that entire segment at myfaithradio.com and search for Walsh or Mind of the Teenager. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by millennial evangelical Chris Martin talking through some dimensions for our young people in church today.
Of all the billions of people on this planet, God chose you to parent your child. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Whether you have birth children, adopted children, grandchildren, or a niece or nephew, God has converged your life with theirs for a reason. In a day when kids have access to all kinds of entertainment, it's easy for parents to feel they can't compete. But kids really do want more than video games, Facebook, and movies. Teens are hardwired to belong. And even though they don't always show it, they crave belonging to you. God chose you to parent your child. Make sure your teen fully understands the extent of their sacred position in your heart.
Check out the articles, books, and parenting tips from Mark Gregston, available online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
It is 20 minutes before the top of the hour. This is Faith Radio Mornings, and Dr. Peter Kapsner hosting this morning. And the lead in music you hear is that of Chris Martin of Coldplay, which, Logan, I know you're a huge Coldplay guy. This is Chris Martin joining us now is not of Coldplay, but yet you are saying that as Chris kind of walks us through the millennial conversation, that you wish you even had a bell in studio with this.
I love talking to Chris Martin. I mean, I wish I had a little silvered dinner bell that I could just ding every time he says something that really tracks with what I'm feeling. He figured it all out. He's got it. Answer.
So no pressure at all, Chris. Good morning. But, you know, it has to be profound again this morning, right?
Oh, yes, always. And, hey, look, you have not seen me and the other Chris Martin in the same place, so let's be clear.
That's true. This could be a doppelganger situation. I didn't even realize that, Chris.
Yes.
So you've got a lot of stuff that we can talk through this morning. Excited for this piece of it. And you have this headline, Extra, Extra, Millennials Trust Media and Religious Institutions Less Than Before. So there's some Pew Research that came out with some recent stats about the trust level of millennial and institutions. Some conflicting data there, but kind of talk us through what you noticed in the stats.
Yeah, sure. So millennials are one of the stereotypes that I most often hear about millennials is that they distrust institutions. And generally, I think millennial stereotypes can be unhelpful because I think any generational stereotypes can be unhelpful because amidst the generation, there's so much diversity in ideology and thinking in life in general and experience. But really, the stereotype of millennials distrusting institutions is pretty spot on. Almost all the data we see, regardless of what kind of institution it is, shows that millennials trust institutions less than other generations do. And two of the biggest institutions in our day, two of the most prominent, I suppose not biggest necessarily in number, but two of the most prominent institutions in our day are churches and religious organizations and the national news media, which, like, when you hear national news media, you may get a positive or negative taste in your mouth about that, but they really are an institution. They all, obviously, different ones have different angles and beliefs and agendas, if you want to say that, or different ways in which they prefer to report the news and ideologies that undergird those things. But they're still kind of, it is an institution. And so millennials trust those two institutions, churches and religious organizations, and national news media less than anyone else. In 2010, 73% of millennials trusted religious institutions. They said that religious institutions have a positive effect on the way things are going in this country today. And in 5 years, to 2015, that number dropped to 55%, almost 20% in 5 years. Similar stat with the national news media. In 2010, 40% of millennials thought the national news media was having a positive effect on America. And in 2015, that number went down to 27%, dropping 13% over 5 years. And that last data point comes from 2 years before the inauguration of President Donald Trump, a year before the election results came out. So we know that it's only really gotten more divisive. The matter of the national news media has only gotten more divisive since then. So I can only imagine those numbers have even perhaps dropped even more.
Yeah.
And so those. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would love to mine that data a little bit more on the news, too, because it's important to note, as you said, this was before President Trump kind of has these classic attacks on the news. Is sort of, do you think, what's going on with this? And Bruce Ashford was on earlier this week, and he talks a lot about Christianity for the common good. And he made the point that what passes as news these days in the evening programs is actually almost more tabloid. And if you turn on Fox News for 20 minutes and then you turn on CNN for 20 minutes, what they choose as news and headlines really diverges. Is this kind of, it's more about tabloid and getting clicks and listeners than it is about news these days?
Possibly. I love Bruce. Bruce is a really good friend of mine, actually. And I think he's right about some of that. But I think when it comes to millennials like consuming tabloidy kind of stuff. They watch YouTubers who talk about drama and stuff like that all the time. And so I actually think maybe what it is, and because as a millennial, this is what I can speak to. I think it may just be that millennials are waking up to the fact that national news media is biased. Whether they agree with it or not, they simply just don't like the presence of bias. And so whether it be CNN, Fox News, or another, when they sniff out bias, it makes them it makes them less willing to trust the institution. And so it may be what they decide is news, though honestly, I don't know. I think that's probably more of a problem for boomers and Gen Xers, maybe the older generations. They don't like seeing the tabloidy stuff. Young people like seeing tabloidy stuff because they're the ones that follow Kim Kardashian and others on Instagram. So I don't know that it's necessarily the topic of news, though that could be the case for young people. For young people, though, I think more that it may be the bias and the angles and the agendas, because we know that 50% of millennials identify as politically independent. So if 50% of millennials identify as politically independent, regardless of how they vote, that's kind of how they think of themselves. If they think that way, they're not going to like news coming from a particular angle. They're just going to want it shot straight at them. And so I think just the general idea that this news agency, regardless of which side they're on, is presenting me the news and perhaps leaving out some facts or embellishing some facts that make their point just creates a general distrust overall.
You know, Logan's in studio. He's got his little notepad, and he wrote out the word ding, I kid you not, on the notepad, and you've gotten about 13 dings this morning. But, Logan, I have to say, the one reluctant ding when you kind of raised with a sheepish look on your face was when Chris mentioned that millennials do love the tabloidy stuff on YouTube.
Kim Kardashian is our fault. We are sorry for making her as famous as she is. And I've wrenched myself away from that part of the culture, but you're totally right. That's something we're obsessed with. But I love what you touched on with the inclusion of the stuff on YouTube and stuff and news, because I digest all of my news now from a YouTuber. And there are so many channels that are sick and tired of the bias. They said, I'm going to start my own where I just throw the news because of how sick everyone is of the bias. And they're starting their own corporations because of how successful they've been in that.
Any of this sound familiar to you, Chris?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I'd love to chat with him afterward, because I bet we watched the same guy based on how he just described that. But it's really fascinating beyond, because when you think YouTuber, right? When you think YouTuber, you think some teenage kid sitting in his bedroom or his parents' basement recording. You know, it's like what we thought of bloggers back in like 05. But there are YouTubers creating news organizations, news to compete with, and who have more subscribers on the platform than CNN has subscribers on the platform, or than perhaps CNN has subscribers via cable. So it's really fascinating. And what I like about certain news YouTubers that I watch is that they give their opinion, but they start by reporting the story, giving the facts. And then they say, all right, and now I'm going to give you my perspective on this issue. So I'm not opposed to getting news from, as a millennial, I'm not opposed from about getting news from a source that has an opinion. I just like it when they draw the line in the sand and say, okay, we're moving from reporting to what I think about this. And too often, that line in the sand is not clearly enough drawn in traditional news outlets.
We're getting perpetual dings now at this point from Logan, Chris. It's 12 minutes for the top of the hour. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, let's move into the conversation about the growing distrust for church and the institution there. We're Chris Martin, millennialevangelical.com is the site. You can read a lot of his stuff there. Short break. Come back in just a minute. Just about 9 minutes before the top of the hour, it's Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we're joined on the line by Chris Martin, millennialevangelical.com, regular contributor, to talk us through some of the generations emerging and what's on the mind there. And Logan, I just want to commend you for apologizing for the rise of Kim Kardashian. The air finally feels clear between us in this situation.
I don't know how we got to this point, Peter. I just know we did it.
Yeah, well, your spiritual maturity really is reflected in this moment. So, Chris, let's get into this idea of the religious institution's loss of trust among the millennials. And does some of it have to do with another article that you've written, that young people are sick of being preached at by preachers for their own sin when there's this hidden sin going on, even in the preacher's lives? Has this kind of unraveled the fabric of trust there to some degree?
Yeah, for sure. I think I wrote in my book, and that's not meant to be a plug of it, but I wrote in my book about millennial distrust of institutions, and there are three major ways I think millennials have distrusted institutions over the course of their developmental lifetime, like when they were young adults and getting into adulthood. I think 9/11 made them distrust the government, not because they think the government did it or anything like that, but because they said, man, we may not be safe in our own homes or in our own country. I think the Great Recession made them distrust banks and financial institutions, and Pew has a lot of research on that. And I think one of the greatest factors, though, depending on your area of the country, this was almost a regional story, sadly. I think the Catholic priest sex scandal of the late 20th century, early 2000s, caused a lot of institutional distrust in the church. But also, I think millennials are just getting more secular. A lot of this goes back to the internet. They're being exposed to ideas at a young age and engaging with ideas at a much younger age than they did in the past. But we know this, that millennials distrust the church in a way that generations before them didn't. 35% of American Christians in general, not just millennials, believe that attending religious services is essential to being a Christian. Only 35%. So we want people to go, if we're Christians and we want people to be involved in the local church, they have to attend. But what we don't want, especially if they distrust the church, is we don't want them attending for bad reasons. Now, what's a bad reason to attend church, or how can I say that with any authority? I think these are three reasons. You know, though we want young people to attend church, these are three reasons they may be motivated that we don't necessarily want to be the case. Number one, we don't want people to join the church or come to church to be served. Now, we want the church to serve people, but we don't want people to come to the church with the motive of being served. We join the church to use the gifts God has given us to serve other people. And so I think we need to be careful about joining a church because we want a church to serve us. We need to have more of a posture that we want to join a church in order to join a family in which we can serve together. And that's a big thing with millennials. One of the best ways the church can reach millennials is not by changing their doctrine to adhere to some sort of thing that the millennials believe that they don't, or compromising in other ways. One of the best ways the church, the local church, can reach millennials is by feeling more like a family than an institution. And it's not like they really should have to try that hard, because the church is a family. The church is not like a family. Ephesians 5 tells us that the church is a family. So if the church can just act in the reality that it is a family more than it is an institution, I think it'll be better at attracting millennials. Number two, we don't want people to join a church or attend a church to boost their self-esteem. Now, depending on who's preaching and what they're talking about, they may do a good job of boosting your self-esteem or telling you how great you are. But a lot of times, if you're going to church, your pastor may be trying to show you where you fall short. And so we don't want people to join a church or attend regularly with the intent of feeling better about themselves. One, because that's not what it's about. But two, because they just may not find that. And it may make institutional distrust in the church even greater. And then third, this is just kind of a ranty thing that I've had to talk about in the past. So you don't want to join a church to get luck on your side. It's not like God sees you attending church and says, oh man, I'm going to make sure their tire doesn't go flat on their way to work on Monday because they attended church this weekend. We don't want this sort of superstitious attendance of church, because that can get really problematic as well.
Yeah, those are great points there, Chris. We can find this on millennialevangelical.com. Say, we only have about 30 seconds left, but are you seeing also a decline in spiritual interest among millennial at the same time there's a decline in interest in church, or are they just going different directions with interest in spiritual things?
No, they are very much spiritual but not religious. That's kind of a buzzword. And so they're very interested in what's beyond, in how the universe started. They're interested in what is beyond just the physical and what they can see. Millennials are not just naturalists. They're very interested in the spiritual. It's the religious and the rules and the institutions that are a little bit more unattractive to them.
When we have you on next time, Chris, I would love to get into that more deeply. It's fantastic stuff. Logan has littered the studio with dings all over his little post-it notepad here. So clearly you've touched the nerve for Logan this morning. Thanks for being with us and sorting through these issues with us.
Thanks, man. It was great to talk to you.
All right, we'll take a short break and then we'll wrap up our hour. Thanks for staying with us. It's Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner. Two and a half minutes before the top of the hour, and joined now in the studio by Paul Perreault, the news director of this morning show. Paul, clearly, I understand YouTube's a new technological platform of some kind. Have you heard of this thing before?
Really?
Where are you getting your news from these days, Paul?
Not that I don't use YouTube, but I don't go for a video blogger like you're talking.
Right, right.
What's the name of the guy
His name's Philly D.
Philly D, yeah. I've never heard of him.
And you and Chris were literally cheering during the break about watching the save. So it's Philly D. Clue us in. Who is this guy?
Well, he's crass, you know, careful for family watchers. But, you know, he's just a guy who's really tired of the bias that shows up in both places. And he's really good at sniffing out what he calls the garbage that is just not essential to a news story, and it's fluff, it's very clearly a lie or whatever have you, and it just makes me feel very secure about, okay, this is the news. I may not agree with how he feels about it, but it's the news.
Paul, Monday morning, we need some headlines from it's Philly D.
Nope,
is that what we're talking about?
I don't. It's not for everyone.
Philly D, Paul. No. Say we're at the
I'll
end of our
I'll stick with Reuters.
probably fair. At the end of our show, thanks for listening this week. I hope you all have a great weekend. Remember that tomb is empty, so in the difficulty of life, there's always hope and future.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.